Welcome, ladies and gentlemen, and well, happy holiday season to everyone as well as we approach the end of November, beginning of December. A very special time for all of us sporting fans in general, as there's just a lot of good stuff going on in the wide world of sports, but especially a big time moment in time, if you will, for we Liverpool fans, because it's Derby Day, baby! That's right. This time around, we get to go up against the always dangerous, but mostly dangerous to themselves, Everton. So we'll get to that in just a minute. But before then, we'll talk about a number of other things here on this episode of You'll Never Talk Alone. Joseph Craven here, your friend, along with Alex Lovell. Alex, how are you tonight?
I'm doing really well. I've got MLS playoffs on in the background, and they're currently just kicking the crap out of each other, so it's great. It's
okay, like watching, I was going to say.
It's like watching Burnley versus anybody.
I was going to say, you can't be doing that well.
Yeah.
If you're stuck with the MLS playoffs on. I really shouldn't be so harsh on the MLS. I just can't watch it. I just can't get around to it. Oh, well.
Now's the time for it, though. It's playoff time.
You're right.
It's when a team that has no shots throughout an entire match can end up advancing to the next round.
Right,
which
exactly.
Happened.
Of course. Why wouldn't it? Oh, incredible stuff. But we are here, of course, to discuss what we always discuss, and our Reds, and how things have gone over the past several weeks. Obviously, we have continued to stray from our normal weekly upload schedule just because of relative life busyness in general. But at the same time, it kind of gives us more to discuss on a week-to-week basis as opposed to, or on a episode-to-episode basis as opposed to the occasional weeks in a row where we don't have anything new to say that hasn't been discussed already, you know? So I'm trying to find the silver lining here. Since then, there's been some slight disappointment since, you know, over the past couple of weeks of the, in particular, the West Ham result. But other than that, everything has been very smooth sailing. I mean, coming off of two disappointing Premier League results against Brighton and Hove Albion and then West Ham, you couldn't ask for better performances against Arsenal, against Southampton, and of course, just kind of a unnecessary success against Porto, but we'll take any level of success for sure. So three straight victories now for the club heading into this Derby Day matchup against Everton. In general, Alex, before we start talking about some of the specifics that we see in certain matches, before we talk about what we're looking for in this Derby matchup, before any of that, let's just talk about, in general, what has been working so well for this team in the last few weeks. Obviously, the team's good, and they've been good all season, and this is a season where everyone's going to have some disappointments every now and then, it seems like, you know. But what's been working well in recent memory for the club over the past three matches in particular?
So it's a smaller point that will turn into a larger point, or a larger point that will turn into a smaller point, I should say, sorry. We're getting people back from injury.
Yeah.
And that has weirdly been helpful. Who would have thought that having more than 13 people to choose from for any given match would be immensely helpful? But
what are the odds?
We're seeing it come about, especially in the midfield, and I know it's something we've touched on in the episodes that we can record, but when our midfield can be balanced and offer a different palette of midfielder at each position, we just look so much better than when we have duplicates or players with similar profiles that want to do the same things and kind of get in each other's way or don't cover the spaces as well. I think we want to touch on slightly the West Ham disappointment. That yeah. was one where the midfield selection that we had, they were all wanting to do the same thing, and it left a bunch of spaces because no one wanted to cover. It left Fabinho stretched, and like it was just him and the two center backs against three West Ham counterattackers, and it was really just vertically stretched. But when you look at the Arsenal match, you look at the Porto match, and you look at the Southampton match, we saw Fabinho and Thiago getting to play together, and they are just so good and have a clear understanding of how to play off of each other, where they need to be, how to support each other, how to work in tandem with whoever they're partnered with, as we saw multiple good results featuring them. I think they've only ever conceded 2 goals when they've been playing together. So it just kind of speaks to how much balance, how much coverage they can offer and enhance each other's play. Because, I mean, you saw Thiago playing really well, getting goals, hitting arguably the best half volley that anyone's ever hit before in the history of ever.
Arlo White cannot stop posting that video on his Instagram account, and it cracks me up because for the most part, like, he's very balanced. He's a Leicester fan, Arlo White is. So, like, he posts about being a Leicester fan, and that's always kind of cool to see, like, because you know how he's very professional in the booth. So, you know, when he posts about being a fan, it's kind of cool. But he doesn't really often post a huge amount about specific teams or specific moments. He must have shared that Thiago goal like 3 times in different variations and angles. It's hilarious. He just kept putting it up there. It's cracking me up.
It didn't bounce. It skipped. No. Like, it's spinning, and it just kind of like grazes the ground. And then when it does that, it accelerates. It was just mystifying, and it kind of just reinforces the fact that I know he had like one risky pass at the start of the Southampton game that everyone wants to latch onto because for some reason the press loves to just slate him as some sort of fraud. But he's one of the most like technically gifted, cleanest technique players around. And that half volley just kind of sums that up because you could easily shank that out for a throw in. But instead he defied physics by just hitting it perfectly. So yeah, larger point that having people back from injury gives us options and it gives us the mix that we wanted. And nothing emphasizes that more than summer transfer window 2021 coming through in the Southampton match.
Yeah, exactly. So if we look at what's funny about it is that if you look at just the starting 11 maybe in the past few matches, there's not like a huge amount of change. Obviously, Thiago did not start against West Ham. Ox did, but that was, you know, partly because that, you know, Thiago was still really working back to, you know, 100% fitness, all of that. But since then, it's been Thiago and Fabinho and like another mix of, you know, Henderson against Southampton, but Ox before then. So it's like you could, you know, you've got either Ox, Hendo, Fab, Thiago in that starting rotation. But we've been able to see a lot more playing time from, hey, your boy Taki, Takumi Minamino, coming in and putting in some very valuable minutes over the past few matches. Especially that Arsenal beatdown, you know, where he was also contributing from a goal-scoring perspective. You got to see some actual, you know, some matches in which James Milner didn't feature, like the first time ever, you know, basically. But you got all these different, you got to see the rotation more, exactly what you're saying. And in the process, we got to see a little bit of what we had talked a bit about before, where it felt like, obviously there was a distinct reason we were bringing in the players that we were bringing in. But they got hurt immediately, as far as the 2020 players go, Thiago and Diogo Jota. There was a distinct reason we're bringing them in, and we're finally really getting to see why that is. And so the summer 2021, you know, signings or whatever, maybe, or 2020 signings bleeding into 2021, however it is. But you see how, like, the guys that were brought in obviously were supposed to be immediate role, you know, big-time players, and we're finally getting to reap their benefits, especially watching Diogo Jota go through this just insane run of form that he's in right now. So yeah, exactly what you're saying. When we actually have the players fit, the players that we brought in last season that never really got a chance to shine, and I include Minamino in that because Minamino had to, for like wage purposes, you know, be sent away for a little bit to make some things work. And now that he's back, we're seeing him fit into the rotation and contribute. It just is exactly what this squad should have been and was meant to be last season.
Yep.
Finally happening. So you see why last season was such a one-off performance. In particular, you see why last season was kind of like a I mean, fluke, I don't feel like is the right term for it, because anyone can fall victim to injuries at any point in time. That's not a fluke thing. That's just, that's part of the game that happens sometimes. Or in case, you know, you're Virgil van Dijk, it's part of the game that should never happen, because your opponent shouldn't be able to, you know, Tanya Harding you in the middle of a match. So you've got this, was that too inappropriate of a comment? I don't think it was.
No,
I don't think
no.
it was, right? Yeah. So you have, you finally have, like, you know, what should have been last season now in this season, which is nice. Now, on a smaller, maybe microcosm of that perspective, of that, like, one-off kind of, you know, kind of let down, in the middle of what has been a very good season so far was, of course, that West Ham match. Let's touch on that for just a little bit, because it does seem like it doesn't necessarily carry a huge amount of weight moving forward, because the team bounced back so quickly from it. But that was the first Premier League loss of the season. We can hope only Premier League loss of the season, right? But it was the first one to break the undefeated streak on the team so far. But, well, I mean, what from that match, do you, or what's your assessment of it? Do you feel like it was a bit of a, we were really off, disappointment? Allison obviously was, you know, off that particular game. But do you think that's just kind of one of those things we can write off? Or do you feel like there's something from that that maybe we have to be wary of as we move forward?
Well, we need to know that apparently some refs don't understand that you can't like block people's arms from going to grab the ball. I don't really understand how that goal stood.
Yeah.
And from there, we never really recovered. It looked like it was one of those old matches where, like, something, like, I had flashes of Adam Bogdan dropping a Watford corner into a net and just, like, us never recovering from that. That was basically what happened, even though we scored twice, even though Trent scored an amazing free kick. It just seemed like we were up against it, and then kind of going back to the balance that we had, we were stretched. We didn't do the things that have made us so good. I mean, of course, I'm going to go back to Thiago, but the goal that he scored against Southampton, where he breaks into the box, takes somebody on, we weren't doing any of that. And we didn't have the type of midfield that was looking to kind of make those types of moves. Like, they'll drive at people, and that's what Ox did so effectively against Arsenal. He picked it up deep and just ran at people, and it wasn't necessarily taking people on, like, edge of the box, a bit of magic. It was like, let's blast past people and create spaces. We didn't have someone, like, looking to unlock things or anything like that against West Ham. And I mean, I think it was a one-off. I think it was those two matches with Brighton and West Ham were a good wake-up call. I mean, even though we scored, and I think it's, what, 17 matches where we've scored two or more goals in a row, that's insane. But we didn't want to rest on our laurels. We didn't want to – we realized now, hey, we can't just wait for Salah to do something. Like, a lot of us need to step up, and a lot of us need to be the cog in the machine that is so effective. So I hopefully it's a one-off. I think it'll be a one-off, and I think we can expect other teams to have kind of those days as we get into the heavy fixture pileup.
Yeah, I think you're right. I mean, if you look at the table right now as it stands, I mean, there is no one that had, you know, that has not lost a match so far. City has lost two on the season, which is always, in recent memory, recent years at least, is bizarre for them to already have two losses on the schedule. In fact, you know, our results are looking a little bit more City-ish then, as far as the past couple of, you know, having 8 wins, but then those 4 draws and 1 loss, that's kind of looking vaguely City-ish, as they've been lately. But, you know, no one is perfect so far in the season. And the draws that we've had, I mean, I know that Brighton is not right now where they were at the time that we were facing them as far as the table goes, but Brighton is a solid team this year. And they've shown that against a handful of different opponents. So, like, you can't just walk into Brighton and expect, you know, a big victory. Now, like, Brentford is still weird. That was a weird anomaly of a match. But again, there's a lot of newly promoted teams that start off the season hot. I mean, just look at Norwich beating City last season Was that last season? Two seasons ago. That was last
two seasons ago.
Two seasons ago. Thank you. Norwich, you know, starting off two seasons ago by you know beating City early on in the season. These things do happen sometimes. It just happened to be our time for that to occur, you know, which is annoying and frustrating. But then beyond that, it's, you know, a decent team in City, you know, who's okay, I guess, that we draw with. You know, it's that those sort of results that that we've had to deal with so far. And so it shows you that, yeah, I mean, we're not slipping up much against teams that or not consistently slipping up against teams that it's unexpected to slip up against. Even that Brentford match, if you just kind of look at the recent trends. That West Ham match is could be the outlier, except for the fact that West Ham's sitting in fourth place.
Yeah.
Like, West Ham's doing pretty well this season. So it's just one of those things where, yeah, you could look at it and go, okay, like, this is going to be one of those years where that sort of thing happens. Eventually, it's going to happen to just about everybody, you know? Chelsea and City are also going to have moments in which they slip up a bit. They're going to have probably more of those. We will probably have more of those. We have to try to avoid them best we can. A good way of avoiding that is, of course, to rebound by beating another top, you know, five opponent. Well, they're top five right now, but beating another, you know, historically one of the big six in Arsenal handedly.
Yeah.
An absolute drubbing 4-0. Let's talk about that one now. As far as just comparing those two matches in particular. Obviously, you got the Thiago back in the starting lineup alongside Fabinho, and you've talked already about how dynamic those two are together. We've talked about how huge Diogo Jota has been alongside Sadio Mane and Mohamed Salah, who continue to be amazing. And Mane, it's so good to see him bounce back like he has from last season, what he admitted was one of the worst seasons, you know, in his career so far. But let's talk about the comparison there. What's different in that matchup, maybe, but than the West Ham match that allows us to jump out on a team like Arsenal and win 4-0, besides the fact that Arsenal just sucks?
One thing, and you cited the Brentford match as well, that Arsenal didn't really have that Brentford and West Ham did, is just a bunch of giant guys for set pieces. That is kind of a weakness for us. Is that when they've got strong aerial players and we don't have Konate in, and I know Virgil was in for Brentford for both matches, really, but that tends to be a weak spot for us, and Arsenal didn't really bring that, so that helped. I mean, we used Anfield to our advantage in that Arsenal match. I mean, they played pretty well for probably 20 minutes, but eventually we overwhelmed them. We started doing exactly what we're good at. We just put them under so much pressure in a bunch of different ways. We had Ox driving at them. We had Thiago picking them apart. We had them kind of bricking it a bit whenever Salah and Mane got it. And then Jota getting into great spaces, bringing out his FIFA skills into real life that he mentioned, I think, in multiple interviews referring to that goal, just kind of capitalizing on every mistake. And that's what you have to do when you're a top team, is when teams mess up against you, when you force them into errors like that really stupid Nuno Tavares pass. Like, it's one of those things, I can't remember if it was talking about us, like when Klopp first took over, but like when we put teams under pressure and we press so heavily, like we look at passes by other teams that are stupid like that. Mm-hmm. And we're like, what is he thinking? But then you look at kind of the context of where they are within the press and you're like, oh, that actually seems like the only logical choice that they could have made. So you just drive teams into making really dumb choices just based off of the effort and work rate. So I think that was one thing we did really well. And it helped that they just forgot to mark us in the box a lot of times.
Yeah.
It was great to see Taki score, like you mentioned. I think it was his second touch or first touch. It's just so happy for him to finally get a league goal for us, and because we're going to need him coming up when AFCON kicks off. Another shout out. I know it's been mentioned a bunch, but the bust up between Arteta and Klopp, that got the crowd going, and that got the players going because the crowd got going. So thanks to Lego Man for getting fired up for absolutely no reason.
I'm doing my Lego hands right now. Doing my Lego hands. Yeah, absolutely. The energy is one of those things that you see as we talk about the differences from last season to this season, just the energy of having Anfield crowds again is amazing. Or not, you know, and it doesn't even have to be Anfield crowds. Just having fans fully back wherever is great, because even if you're on the road, you could feed off of that energy, you know, the negative energy that's thrown at you. You can rise to that again. Sometimes I can imagine that it would just get like dull and kind of like, I don't want to say boring, because, you know, obviously these guys would not be playing at that high level of professional sport if they didn't enjoy playing the sport. But you got to imagine that it just takes a lot out of it when you don't have anyone in attendance, even people rooting against you.
Yeah.
So I know it says a lot as one of those major differences. Let's talk a bit about Ox. You mentioned, you know, him, his tendency and his love for really trying to put the pressure on from the midfield. We've talked in the past on the podcast about how he is one of the few guys that we have in the lineup that is always willing to attempt a long range shot, which is, you know, just a little bit different than normal, because our forwards like to score from immediately in front of the goal. You know, he's always going to try to stretch the defense out just a bit, but it's along with that, you know, he's had his fair share of injuries over the years. We finally seen in the past month or so, several matches in a row where he has either started or been one of the top subs. So we're seeing a lot of play out of him. How about Ox being a consistent contributor? How has that helped the team out, you think?
Yeah, immensely, because he's been around the bench. Like, he's been on the bench for a while, but there's a long time where he would come in and you'd kind of be like, I don't know what I'm going to get out of this. You weren't really quite sure. And he was getting maybe 5 minutes here, 10 minutes there.
Yep.
And it never really seemed to be clicking for him. And it was his career has just kind of been stop start for us since he had that knee injury. I mean, he was always kind of injury prone beforehand, and then he fixed it, and then it just came back. But I mean, it's been great to see him when he's on it. He offers us something that shows exactly why we brought him in, exactly why we view him as a midfielder and not a winger. And it really adds to the dynamic of the team and just keeps everyone on their heels that we're playing against, because he's just so willing. He's such a willing runner, willing to go at people, open up spaces with his runs and have a shot, like you mentioned. It's been called out a few times by journalists. There's been articles about it, but his contract is up, I think, in 18 months. It's kind of blown under the radar. I know there's a lot of other contract disputes that we're focused on. And it's not disputes, but will we renew them or not?
But contract situations.
Yeah.
That's the professional way of wording it, sir. Yeah. Situations.
And I mean, he's got kind of a point to prove to see, like, will he get a renewal? Will he stick around? Is he still part of this unit? Is he part of this group that we're putting together? So it's nice to see him kind of break out the vintage Ox, and I'd love to see it when he does it against his old team in Arsenal.
That's true. That's very true. It was. Oh, and you know what? We haven't even talked about the most important midfield member in the squad, Tyler Morton, showing up in that Arsenal match. Yeah. You know, I hadn't even talked about that. You're right. I love seeing the, as you said, the vintage Ox, and seeing. Well, he's like the extended release version of the 2020 transfer window for us. Of now, we're finally getting to see why it is that we targeted Thiago and Diogo Jota. Well, now we're really seeing fully why it is that we brought in Ox to begin with, because what he brings fits the scheme, fits the team dynamic so well, and it's just been, you know, unfortunate that he's always had to deal with what he's had to deal with. So huge to have him back. He's like the, you know, another alternate version of that whole, like, there was a reason we went after him, because we're so purposeful in our signings, you know, much to the frustration of a lot of fans who just expect us to throw cash around like we're Man United, acting like which as we all see, comes not from a confidence that you're buying the right player, but from a complete lack of identity and an understanding of what you're trying to build as a team. Like, that's why they do it. and it's pretty obvious now with the condition that the club is in. That's why it's happened. You know, we've always had a very clear type of player we've targeted, and we don't go after players all willy-nilly. Mm-hmm. You know, we were all kind of confused and surprised when we made a sudden secret move for Diogo Jota. Well, look at what he's doing now. And look at the fact that he's been able to, you know, be a perfect, you know, not just support for Bobby Firmino, but like when the two of them were around to alternate who was starting, it helped both of them out. Like Bobby all of a sudden started having a bit of a resurgence this season because Diogo was able to give him the relief that he needed. Along with that, we had no idea who this Kostas Tsimikas kid was, you know, when he came in. Next thing we know, it's like, oh, he's an incredible cover for Andy, the player that never gets to sub out ever. So now Andy gets to rest from time to time. Incredible. So you get to see why it is that we're so purposeful in our signings. And Ox, you know, he's been around for longer than the rest of them, but it's the same situation with him. And I think it's very satisfying to see him have a good run of form like he's having right now.
Yeah.
To say the least. All right. I did jokingly mention, you know, Tyler Morton, but Tyler Morton also came in and started the match against Porto, which is great. Played the whole 90 minutes. We used all five substitutes, but we did not sub out the 12-year-old child that we had put in the midfield. And I love that. Love that for sure. That Porto match, though, I do think it's interesting that... Were you kind of surprised to see less rotation? I mean, it's not just that we've secured Champions League advancement, we've secured the group. Yet, we still put out Mane and Salah. We still put out... I guess Thiago makes sense because you want to get him, you know, as much match fitness as possible. But still putting out there, you know, Ox and subbing in Jordan Henderson and James Milner and, you know, Fabinho subbing in at some... Were you a little bit surprised that we didn't dig a little bit deeper into those random reserves? Or is this something that you felt like was totally just understandable? You got to do what you got to do.
On one hand, yes, kind of, although I'm kind of fully expecting that for the final match of the group.
Yeah.
Now that everything's assured, we've got all the maximum money we could possibly get. It's on the other hand, there were a lot of people coming back from injury, like we mentioned.
Yeah.
There were that needed time. I mean, Tyler Morton has been playing in cups. He's been playing. He got the time against Arsenal that you mentioned. Like, he's clearly working into the fold. And will be great for Blackburn next season. So looking forward to that. But it's one thing that Klopp's touched on a lot this season, and he's constantly mentioning rhythm and timing people with rhythm and not getting people out of rhythm. And I think that's why he left everybody in, is to keep them in rhythm, keep them firing, whatever is good for them to say, like get regular touches, regular like match scenarios to keep them involved. Especially when you look at someone like Mo Salah, who's in the form of his life, just banging in the goals, just unstoppable. You don't want to necessarily stop him from doing that. You want him to keep going. And if it works within his fitness, then you do that. And that's what else we're considering, is managing the workload, getting ready for these crazy fixture pileups, and also knowing that Salah and Mane are going to be gone as the turn of the year, so use them while we can. So I'm not really that surprised that we didn't rotate that much, although I'm expecting more against Milan.
Yeah, you would hope so, for sure. I guess that's a great point. And I mean, also, like, it's, you know, it's kind of easy to forget because we get used to those moments in which we're putting in a whole bunch of kiddos, that we don't have the same Champions League like roster that we do available to us when it is, you know, the Carabao Cup or whatever it is. So, mm-hmm. You know, I always kind of forget that myself. But yes, I agree with you. Like, there, it's kind of a halfway point. I think also what goes along with it is that it's a little bit surprising to see us still do pretty well.
Yeah.
And still win. In what was kind of a, unchallenging match. I mean, I don't want to say it was unchallenging, but at the same time, it kind of just felt like for a match that didn't really seem to matter to us. And so motivation by that, like we didn't have anything to really to gain or lose in the setup. Motivation, maybe not quite the same. They still went out and performed and were clinical in finishing off the match. So I think that says a lot. And obviously the momentum that comes off of that helps feed into that 4-0 against Southampton, which was just an absolute, you know, in control from the get-go. Obviously Jota scoring almost immediately, but in control from the get-go sort of match. There's a lot of momentum that can be gained from that. And that goes a long way in securing what rightfully needed to be a dominant victory against a lower table team, but ended up being a very confident and comfortable victory. So, Southampton, let's talk a bit about that, and then we'll hit on a few other topics as we get ready to preview the derby and moving forward from the derby. But Southampton, your take in that, you know, anything in particular stood out in that match that maybe we haven't already covered in terms of some of the general things that occurred or the general strategies that worked out? Anything stand out to you, Alex?
Just talking again about Jota being a great striker, but also like he's playing the true modern nine. He's dropping deep and opening spaces for Salah and Mane to fill in. He's also just in the box when we need him to be, and he's just so smart. And there's so many times where you look at him and he's wide open, and you know, one, it's maybe not the best defending, but two, his movement clearly opened that space for him. So just his intelligence is something that I think a lot of people are still overlooking. It's great to see. I honestly wanted to touch on the fact that the fact that we won 4-0 was not necessarily assured because we tried to give them at least one goal.
That's true.
With a lot of screw ups. Like that's the only way they were going to score was us screwing up. And boy, did we certainly try for at least the first 20 minutes or so after we scored that first goal. So we that's definitely need true. To not do that anymore.
Yeah, I think it was some of the commentators were talking about how it just kind of it was bizarre how by the time the match was done, it was like, wow, that Liverpool really was in control of that match. But there was that early on moment where Southampton was like, no, we live in your defending third. We live here now. We didn't have possession. We didn't have, any control. We never looked dangerous for that stretch in there. It just was incredible how quickly it turned back around. We tried really hard to put them in the match early on, but then we were able to quickly and effectively and efficiently put them away at about the 30-minute or so mark. Because, I mean, then you have the Diogo's second goal was in the 32nd minute. Thiago got his in the 37th minute. So within 5 minutes, all of a sudden, it just became boom, boom. Hey, you're down three. Bye-bye, Southampton, which was nice. So, yeah, that's a weird dynamic. I'm glad you pointed that out, because that's a weird dynamic, how quickly it shifted from immediate goal. Could Liverpool run away with it? To, nope, Southampton's really pressing, and Liverpool is not really stopping them. To, okay, never mind, Liverpool just controlled. And I think that's one of those things that you have to be able to do. That's like a tiny, real compact example of how you have a successful season of winning and showing success in multiple ways, in multiple styles, in multiple situations. That's like a small version of that, you know?
Yeah, and like it's crazy how high-paced it was at the start and back and forth and us screwing up and then us scoring a bunch. And then by the 60th minute, it was clear that no one wanted to be there anymore.
Yeah.
And we're just ready to get the match over with.
Like, all right, fine. Really, really incredible. So let me ask you this. Now that we've come out of this recent stretch of things, moving forward, is there anything that is different about this team right now compared to maybe at the start of the season when we were really, you know, expecting us to get back into title contention, obviously. But is there anything you feel like is different with this squad now that we are hitting December, inching closer and closer to that, you know, that Boxing Day and halfway through the season sort of moment? Anything different to you?
We've got more people that we can trust, I would say. I know we'd had some doubts over some fringe players, or like, why are they still around, or we should just sell them if we can. It seems more like Taki has worked his way into plans. He's getting more time. He's getting picked off the bench more than Origi is now. Like, there's clearly a plan for him. He's clearly taking that next step into fully integrating with the squad and becoming part of that front three. So that's something that's growing. Like, we have more faith in Krostas now. Like, we know we can just throw him in. Like, usually if Andy had gotten injured on international break like he did on the last time, we'd all be freaking out and being like, well, I guess Milner's playing back there now. It's like, no, we have Krostas that can play there, and he's going to be amazing, and we're hardly going to notice that Andy's gone. And again, another player, we've yet to concede a goal with him on the field. Maybe that's down to who he's playing against, but also he's just really good and recovers and does exactly what he needs to do as that left back. So another assurance of a player that we can bring in off the bench. I mean, like we just talked about, Ox back into the threshold. We know what he can do. He's back to doing what we know he can do. Origi's coming back, scoring weird goals. Fully expect him to do something mind-blowing and baffling tomorrow against Everton.
Yep.
But we're not groaning necessarily when he comes off the bench. It's like, oh boy, here we go. Yeah, I think that's the big thing. Like, we've got Tyler Morton as an option now. We replaced young Harvey Elliott with young Tyler Morton, and Harvey Elliott's even making his way back. So
how crazy is that? Can we just for just a moment, like, that is insane to me after watching that Harvey Elliott injury. And I just was like, okay, yeah, that's 10-month recovery time. That's, at the day that Harvey Elliott back in training photos popped up, I like had slept weird and my back hurt all day.
That's
the difference between being like an 18-year-old prime of your life and being, you know, me and the end of my life here in my 30s. I was like, wow, okay, thanks for rubbing it in. But yeah, you're right. You know, all of a sudden we got this kid, this Tyler Morton kid who shows up. We can kind of laugh about him, you know, getting his first appearance or getting his first start, be like, oh yeah, we're throwing the little kids out there. But the same thing goes in that situation as it does with us making transfers to begin with. We have a reason behind it.
Yeah.
You know, like, we just don't throw our youth academy projects or prospects out there for no reason. And you see it with someone like him. You've seen it with Harvey Elliott, and you've seen it with the continued development of Trent Alexander-Arnold from when he first started years ago. So it's all the same thing where it's kind of like, okay, is this a kid that we feel like has the, you know, is going to be the kid that might make the next step for us in a few years? So that's a great point. Yeah, it's been fun. The past few weeks have been. Obviously, the West Ham match is what it is, but outside of that, the past few weeks have been a lot of fun because we're playing, even if we weren't doing well, which we are, the results are good, we're also playing really stupidly entertaining soccer and football as well. You know, so like there's that added benefit of not only are we winning, but we're winning well. And we're winning in a way that is just exciting to watch. And I want to stay glued every single moment. On Black Friday, I impulse bought a Liverpool sweater for my dog to wear because I just want him to enjoy this as much as I'm enjoying this. And I'll be honest with you, he's more of an American football fan, so I don't know if he's going to like it or not. You know,
For now.
I'll win him over. I'm working. I'm playing the long game with him. All right, so a couple of topics I want to hit on real quickly if I can, but of course we're recording this on Tuesday evening, heading up to Wednesday, December 1st, when the derby will actually happen. So at earlier today were the Ballon d'Or results, and Lionel Messi secured the bag, if you will.
Yeah.
Over Lewandowski, over the might of Jorginho. How in the world was that guy in third place? Whatever. But our man, Mohamed Salah, down in seventh place behind Cristiano Ronaldo, which I think is very interesting, just considering the how Ronaldo has been over the past few months and all. But do you feel like, much like Jurgen Klopp himself said, that Lewandowski and Mo Salah were both robbed in the Ballon d'Or results?
Seems like they did away with the award in 2020 just to not give it to Lewandowski. Like, I don't get me wrong. Like, obviously Messi is really good,
yeah.
And what he did in that bad Barca team last season was insane.
Yeah.
And like calendar year wise, yes. But I mean, Lewandowski has been just doing insane, just ungodly things as a striker for Bayern. I mean, the fact that he broke Gerd Müller's record at all was just absolute nonsense, and he's just such a complete player, and I don't know, just it sucks that I feel like just because he plays in the Bundesliga, people, and he plays for Bayern, everyone's like, oh yeah, he only does that because he plays for Bayern. No, he only does all this stuff because he's insanely good.
Yeah.
Could it
possibly be that Bayern's real good because he plays for them? I'm just saying.
Yeah. That sucks. And then Salah, obviously, again, like, and it goes back to probably where we finished last season and mm-hmm. the way our team had to play because everyone was injured. But Salah has just been fantastic, and his form this season seems to not be included in this, and he doesn't seem to have enough commercial deals or
right.
disrupt locker rooms or financially ruin his clubs to
yep.
be looped in. He also didn't play in the Euros, which seems to hurt him completely, or he didn't play in Copa America, which also seems to hurt him. So it's stupid. These individual awards are really stupid.
You know, they really are. Living here in America and in the American Southeast in particular, college football country, I tell you what, there's nothing I find dumber than the Heisman Trophy these
yeah.
days. Being a popularity contest. And it's kind of a shame that something like the Ballon d'Or also appears to be a more of a popularity contest. The bigger names in the bigger, you know, the leagues that are maybe a little bit flashier. And like you just said, even the international competitions, they get more attention. Kind of going a long way there. Because, I mean, that's exactly why, you know, if we're real honest about it, you know, that's why Jorginho is mentioned up there at all. You know,
yeah, it's not he won the Champions League and won the Euros. That's it.
You know, it really has nothing to do with his league, you know, performances at all with Chelsea. But yeah, it's the fact that he got the Champions League victory, and then he did play well in the Euros. You know, he did for Italy, but it's because of that. He gets the attention out of that. That's why he's up there so high. I'm really glad to see some respect given to N'Golo Kanté, because
mm-hmm.
I feel like he is a midfielder that does not get the respect that he should get, just because he's just not flashy at all, you know? But he is so freaking good. So I like to see that, but it still is just, yeah, it's criminal that Mo is all the way down in seventh place. It's criminal that you've got guys like, if we're going to stick with Germany, that you got guys like Erling Haaland and his just insanely stupid goal scoring rate, you know, down in 11th place. But at the same time, whatever. It's like you said, it's the popularity contest a lot of times, and you know, we'll get through the Messi and Ronaldo era and maybe see if the voting on all this changes at all. But I kind of get the feeling it won't. It'll still be kind of the same. Oh, well.
Yeah, it's dumb.
It is what it is, as the people say. That's actually always been my least favorite sports cliche phrase, is when people just come up and go like, well, it is what it is. It is. There actually, for a short period of time, I kept a chart where I would mark down who I heard the quote from and on what day, just to try to see how much I would hear it in like one calendar year. Maybe I'll pick that up. Maybe that'll be my 2022 thing, as I start that chart back up again. I'll consider it. I'll forget about it 5 minutes after we stop recording. but I'm going to think about it.
I'm going to remind you. I'm going to set reminders.
I hope you do. I hope you do. You're my only hope. All right. Let's talk about the Derby for a little bit and some of the upcoming fixtures in over the next couple of weeks as well that we are expecting to probably not have a chance to record, and you know, for another couple of weeks probably. So we're expecting a couple of matches to go through, but we'll focus in particular on the Derby because this is always a heated contest. Obviously, you don't have to look back very far to see just how heated it can be. As you look at last season's matchup where Virgil got hurt, you know, and you see, this could be heated, this could be flat out dirty sometimes, and this could be poorly officiated. So it's always kind of a crapshoot. You're never quite sure what you're going to get. You can put some money down if you want to on the fact that Everton themselves suck right now. They suck bad. They're not doing well in general. In the table, they're in 14th place, but their recent run of form, 1-0 loss to Brentford, 3-0 to Man City, a draw to Tottenham, which is does nothing to instill confidence, a loss to Wolves, and a 5-2 defeat to Watford. So, a poor run of form for Everton. Alex, what the hell is going on with them?
I don't know. Without Calvert-Lewin and missing Richarlison for some of that, they just don't know what they're doing. And it's amazing to watch. I know we love Rafa, but seeing him fail with Everton so far has been delightful because I hate that team. I hate them. They're going to be douchers in this match. They're going to be trying to hurt everybody. And hopefully the players get protected because we lost so many players on this match last year. The same fixture.
I didn't even think I talked about Virgil. I didn't even talk about Thiago.
Yeah. Like his leg broken in his first appearance and we missed it for months. So we just can't have that again. It's a derby, but people can't be getting destroyed in it. Right. And I hope we come out with just some desire for revenge because the home leg of this fixture last season was really stupid as well. We lost Hendo. We had 8 players. It was just dumb. And we need to go out and show them that last season was dumb. And that's why they got a draw thanks to terrible VAR usage and terrible officiating and then us being completely injured and having no fans. So that's what I'm fully expecting is just us to come out and be really, really pissed off that we're having to deal with these idiots again.
It's like, we just can't get them relegated yet. Can we please? Can we please? Maybe this is the year. Maybe this is the year because, we love Rafa. They don't deserve Rafa.
No, they don't.
They don't deserve him. Kind of weird to me still. I kind of forgot for a moment that that's where he is right now. But that's still a little bit bizarre to me to comprehend that he is at Everton. You know? But whatever. Hey, if they're paying big bucks, I get it. You got to do what you got to do. Hopefully this is the opportunity, maybe the season in which we can keep them way on down the table, maybe even try to demoralize them so much that we keep this run of losses, poor form going, and they can end up towards the relegation zone. That would be very, very, very sweet. Yeah. So are you expecting a pretty strong victory here in this derby? What are you expecting here, Alex?
I'm expecting us to score at least 2 goals. I don't know if it'll be a blowout, but I am expecting a victory. I think we'll be too strong for them. If we can keep everyone fit throughout this whole match, we'll just be way better than they are.
Agreed. I would think something along a 2-0 victory seems reasonable to me. I think it'll be kind of a nasty, kind of just a slugfest at times. But I just don't know of anyone on this Everton squad that scares me from a goal scoring perspective, you know? I think they're really just going to try to bother us as much as possible, which might, you know, limit us from dropping 5 goals on them. But there's just nothing about them that I look at and go, yes, they definitely have a chance to score something on us because they just don't. In fact, there's the headline here that I'm reading about the the loss to Brentford. It says, Tony Pinn sees Brentford past dismal Everton. And that's just what they are right now. They're just a dismal team. Joyless football being played. Beyond that, there's a tricky matchup, I think, against Wolves. Always a tricky team to go up against, no matter what's going on with them. And then the matchup against AC Milan coming up. That's all within the next week or so. So let's talk a little bit about Wolves. And probably not much to say about Milan that we haven't already discussed, but we'll mention that it's coming up on Tuesday, December 7th as well. But that matchup against Wolves, Alex, what can we expect out of Wolves being a team that's sitting up in, you know, sixth place right now, 20 points? They basically either win or lose. They just don't draw at any point in time. 6 wins, 5 losses, 2 draws at this point on the season. What do we expect out of them?
They're definitely getting better and better. Their losses earlier in the season were a bit unfortunate, but now they've kind of adapted to the new coach. So they're getting some of their players back. They seem to understand what they're doing, and it's making them a lot better at the game. I mean, they've got Jimenez scoring. They've got Pedence assisting. They're just figuring out how to use the squad that they have. So this will be a tough test. I mean, they're not exactly the best team, but they're not the worst team. And they're just a, like, Europa League quality squad that could give us some trouble. But I think we're better than them for sure. And if we're on our game, we should be able to blow them away. It could be one of those ones like we always – our games with them are either incredibly tight or we win like 4-0. And right. I'm kind of feeling like if we get the right start and as long as no one gets injured against Everton, that we could turn that into another 4-0 win.
Yeah, I feel like this – the Everton match is going to determine a lot about the Wolves match. You know, not just in the the injury department, but also just in the way that we perform. And if it's a strong victory, then I could maybe see either the confidence carrying us through against Wolves, or if it's a tight victory, maybe I could see like that us getting that edge and saying, hey, you know what, we need to go back out there and really show our dominance, exert our dominance against a Wolves team. So there's a lot of situations that I could see it playing into us having a strong performance against them. Obviously, that could very easily be the reverse.
Yeah.
Very easily. So, it's a hard... They're one of those tricky teams to predict anything against. My only real question is, like, whether if things go a little bit poorly for them right now, if they're just going to go ahead and maybe bring Nuno Espirito Santo back, you know? Say, hey, you know what? You're not doing anything. Sorry about that whole four-month thing at Tottenham. Just come on back over here. We could use you in some way in our front office coaching staff. I don't know.
Come play and goal.
Yeah, exactly. Why not? Why not? Who's it going to hurt? You look 50 years old? That's fine. That's fine. Other people have played at that age. Right? Sure.
Yeah.
Yeah. And then, of course, you mentioned the AC Milan matchup. Not even something to get
speaking
into.
Speaking of people playing when they're 50 years old.
Yes.
Let's talk about Milan and Ibra.
Oh, man. It's nice that we have the, basically, I mean, everything, as you mentioned earlier, that could possibly be locked up at this point in time is locked up at this point in time. So the question there becomes, like, what do you think the average age is going to be of our starting 11 against Milan in that matchup? What do you think the average age is?
I think we're just going to take our UEFA Youth League team and play them in this full fixture. So the average age will be like 19.
I love it. I love it. Can't imagine we do much of anything other than put out all the reserves and just play the blandest form of football imaginable. I'm sure we'll do the high pressure because it's just in our DNA. But yeah, can't imagine we put a huge amount into that. I don't even want to give a scoreline prediction. It means so little. But
yeah, and I mean, now's a good time to be playing them with a heavily rotated squad. They've had a bit of a blip. They're doing that thing they did in the spring of last season where they had a title charge and fell away. They're doing that now as opposed to later in the year. So now is the time to play them with a cup squad.
No question. No question. We will hopefully be able to get together and record another episode before The 11th rolls around because it would be great to talk a little bit about that return of Steven Gerrard to the Premier League as we go up against Aston Villa on December 11th. But we will touch base again, listeners, before, about all of that. Alex, thank you, sir, for jumping on this episode with me today.
Always fun to talk about a lot of games that we missed.
I know, just cover like the entire... We really ought to start drifting towards a release schedule that is one episode before the season starts, one episode after the season is ended.
Yeah.
And that's it. You know?
That's all we're here for.
Yeah. What do you think's going to happen? And then the second episode of the season is, so how'd you feel about it? You know, yeah. And that's all. That's all. I think it's just the logical thing to do.
I agree.
I love it. I love it. Well, thank you all for tuning in and listening to this episode of You'll Never Talk Alone. Apologies for the sporadic release schedule. Hopefully some more continuity can come soon enough as our own personal schedules start to maybe wind down a little bit in the busyness and hecticness of life. You know, that's how it goes. That's how life goes sometimes, those ebbs and flows of pure chaos known as trying to exist in this world. For Alex Lebel, I am your friend Joseph Craven, and it's been a pleasure to get back with you here on You'll Never Talk Alone. We, of course, do all of this in honor of our friend Andrew Ainsworth, wherever he is right now.
Gone but not forgotten.
By gone, we mean he's just probably
he's
at home.
Not here, yeah.
He's probably taking a nap. No, maybe he's watching a movie. I don't know. He's probably having a good time. We do it for him, just as we do it for all of you listeners. Thanks for tuning in. We'll catch you next time. You'll never talk alone.